Welcome to the Rude Dits and Loz podcast, kept hot by Ream. You can listen to this podcast any way you like, even in the shower. Ream, Australia's favourite hot water.
Thanks for listening to your Triple M Show podcast. This is a special Triple M's No Talk Day podcast. Your regular Triple M Show will be back soon. Meantime, make sure you follow it on socials and the listener app for all the latest. Triple M's No Talk Day is Monday, July 1, a day where we take all our shows, news, traffic reports and commercials off the air and highlight the importance for men to prioritise their mental well-being. That's why you're receiving this podcast today, the first in a series of three, where Triple M's Sean Goff, who spearheads the No Talk Day initiative on behalf of the Triple M network, sat down with Dr. Ellie Nicolopoulos from Lifeline to find out why some men struggle to ask for help in managing their mental health.
A lot of men that I've spoken to have said that they don't even know who they are anymore, outside of their jobs, families, expectations, stresses. What I think's happening, we hear men don't reach out for support. I think men are trying, but I think these barriers, again, back to this masculinity society, what they're telling them they should be compared to what they are and all of this kind of stuff is actually just serving more as a barrier. What that does is highlight the importance of putting things into place when you're good. What we know is that being open about how you're feeling is a way to connect, as it is to say, I don't even know what the hell's going on or how I feel, but I just know that something's off. Some men say that when they are really in a place of kind of deep struggle, often the last thing they want to do is talk. I think we could both say that we've heard the narrative that he was the last bloke that I thought would have taken his life. He was the happiest bloke. He was the last bloke that I thought that would have happened.
That is true. You do hear that a lot.
Shame for men is so highly correlated with things like depression and suicidality and, you know, substance misuse. And all shame needs to completely multiply is secrecy, silence and judgment. I think this is the problem. I think that mental health is an unfair term for us to link to when we're having problems, because we are experiencing mental health 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Wow. I didn't expect that this would be this good today. I don't know why. I've got nothing to base it on, but you know, I just feel like you've been a revelation today, Ellie, and I really appreciate that.
We hope you come away from this chat with tools you can call on when you need them the most. And remember, Lifeline is always there if you can't say it to someone close. On 13 11 14 or lifeline.org.au/talk.
Ali, No Talk Day, can you, how much of that, and if you don't know anything about it, that's fine, but I just wanted to gauge a bit of an idea of how much you know about it.
So my understanding of it is that you have a day where all normal radio production and messaging stops, and it's an opportunity for men to be able to kind of just have a chat, just have a conversation.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. We do really suspend anything that you would expect, apart from the music, anything you would expect from Triple M on that day. So all of our shows and our announcers come off the air, our news and traffic reports come off the air, and to show that we're really serious about this is we take all of our ads off the air for that day between 6 a.m. and 6 p.m. It's a tangible investment by Triple M and the Triple M network into this space, because we just feel it's super important with what is an epidemic in Australia at the moment, as you well know. You don't need me to tell you that. We've stopped talking to encourage Australian men to start a conversation about mental health, whether it be their own or someone they care about.
Okay, love it.
Should we start with what you do at Lifeline?
Yeah, sure. So at Lifeline, essentially, I'm the wellbeing lead in the product and experience team, which is kind of in our kind of service design and enablement directorate. And my job is essentially to, we have a self-support channel, and not many people know about this of Lifeline, but we have a self-led support channel. So we have our crisis services, our phone service, our chat service, and our tech service. But we also have something called the Support Toolkit, which is a self-led support resource that we've put together that has everything from information through to support services, tools and apps, stories of others, and a heap of kind of techniques and strategies that people can engage with at their own pace, at their own time, in their own stage of their journey, particularly if they're not ready to talk. It's kind of a space that they can get to be able to figure out what it is they need to say, how to say it, who to say it to, what even is going on for them. And it's kind of designed to make sure that we kind of capture everybody at every stage of their journey and get them to the support that they need, or they might find the support within that kind of self-led support channel.
So is that what you guys refer to internally as the Lifeline Toolkit?
That's the support Lifeline Support Toolkit, yeah.
Lifeline Support Toolkit, cool. Yeah. So it sounds to me like a virtual hand-holding exercise where people, you take them by the hand virtually and help them navigate their way through sort of taking charge or looking after their own mental well-being or learning about it.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's the hand-holding into the environment and then the empowerment to let you know that you've got this and you can navigate your way through the environment based on what you need in your time. So it's definitely an entry point, and we definitely want to get them into the hands of men particularly, because we know that men really want practical solutions to problems. Mm-hmm. And this gives them a practical kind of inroad to find the solutions that they're looking for when it's things that aren't really tangible, things that they potentially don't even know is going on for them. Mm. And they can really engage in the information and find the resources as they go on their journey. We definitely want to kind of encourage them into it, but really have a space where they can be informed in what choice to make next, mm-hmm. Where they might be kind of missing that context of what it is even that they're feeling or needing.
So I go there. I'm a 50-year-old male. I go on to the Lifeline website. What do I see? What sort of things can I find there specifically?
Essentially, when you land at the support toolkit, on the homepage, you'll land on a quiz. And the quiz is there to help you navigate to where you need to be. So, you know, you might go and you might say, I'm feeling low or I'm feeling down. Mm-hmm. And you can click, I'm feeling low and I'm feeling down. What do you need right now? Do you need something that's going to help you right now? You can click that. Do you need a support service? You don't know where to go. You can click that. Do you just need some information about what it is that you might be feeling? You can click that. And then what that will do is bring up whatever your preferences are, the resources or the information correlated to what you've popped into that quiz.
So it's fine whether I know what it is that I need or I'm not sure, but I just know I don't feel great. It's okay. I can just go there and I will sort of, it will start to guide me through.
Absolutely. And the reason I think this is such an amazing tool for men specifically is because often I've heard from men that they have no idea what's going on. They just know they're feeling rubbish. They don't know what's going on. And so the support toolkit is curated so you don't have to know. Mm. You can figure it out as you go. Alternatively, if you do know, jump into where you do know, and then that will take you on a journey as well.
Okay. So have you noticed, are there themes for people seeking help? Like, are there themes in the reasons that people come to Lifeline to seek help?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the ones that I would say are really pertinent at the moment are things like loneliness, financial stress, mm-hmm. relationship breakdowns. Relationships might not always be the thing that people, and especially men, the thing that people come to us with, but often they can be the underlying kind of cause for the symptoms. So, for example, if you're worried about your level of drinking and you know you're drinking a lot and you don't know why, and you land in support toolkit and then you find, hold on, I might not just be drinking a lot because of whatever. I might be drinking a lot because there's a relationship problem. Hold on, I'm going to go and suss out what it means to have problems in my relationship. Oh, yep, that's definitely going on for me. And there's a lot of underlying things. So while loneliness and substance misuse and the reason I'm bringing up is I think it's very important, particularly for men, to know that these things that we might be kind of looking for support for or identifying as issues are often the symptoms of an underlying deeper thing. And that's why it's okay to be confused about what's going on and start to, you know, question the things that are going on in your life that might not be, oh, yep, that's mental health. It's okay not to know that.
Yeah, right. Okay. No one's really articulated this in these ways, you know, in the 6 years that I've done this. So this is really great stuff.
Oh, great. I'm so pleased. Thank you, Sean. That's helpful.
So tell me about barriers for men seeking help, Dr. Ali. What are they? Or what are some of them?
Yeah, look, I think the first one that I think everyone would be reasonable to say is this kind of masculinity theme. So mm-hmm. there's still an ingrained kind of societal belief that it's not masculine to talk about your feelings. Yep. The old boys don't cry. In recent times, I think we've moved on like even further beyond this to a really like a confusing space for men in terms of masculinity. So I think if we're talking about something like masculinity, we're talking about what it means to be a man, right? So a lot of men that I've spoken to have said that they don't even know who they are anymore outside of their jobs, families, expectations, stresses. And the issue with this is that if we don't know who we are, we tend to pay attention to the outside to find answers for who we are.
Mm-hmm.
So when we're talking about masculinity and talking about what it means to be a man, and men are saying to us that they don't have that internal source of information, then they're trying to figure out what it means to be a man from the outside world.
Yep.
This is where it becomes a really confusing space because we're giving them all kinds of mixed signals. So like on the one hand, it means being like physically fit to be a man. On the other hand, it means being a provider.
Mm-hmm.
Or does it mean being with as many women as you can find? Mm. Or is it being a really solid man and just being great to one woman and being a good father? And then on the flip side, there's people telling you that being a man means that you're just baseline terrible, that your testosterone levels make you violent, that you're toxic, that you're evil, that you're privileged, that there's a patriarchy, all that kind of stuff. So I think in that masculinity space, we're kind of setting men up to not even know who they're meant to be, let alone who they are. And then it makes sense that there's this kind of inner turmoil that turns them silent when there's such a huge process for them to just kind of try and figure out internally.
Yeah, so I think you've just nailed it. It's confusion and turmoil, it sounds like.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what happens when they do seek help, Ali?
So, great question. Look, I think what's happening is that, this is very general, but I, from my experience, this is not just professionally, from my mates as well, but I think men are, they know that this is going on, right? They know that this thing is happening where there's this confusion. And let me give you an example, and I might go back and forth here, but it'll make sense. So, and she won't mind me telling you this, but I was at the gym yesterday morning and I do like some pretty intense, like high intensity stuff with a lot of the boys. And the coach, one of the boys was whinging about the workout and the coach was like, "Stop whinging." And I really like it. Like, and I pulled her aside and I was laughing and I was like, "Oh mate, I'm doing radio tomorrow for like men's mental health." Like, and you just told him to stop whinging. And we had a laugh about it and it was a laugh, right? And I came away from that and I was like, right. So I thought about 10 of my male mates and I was like, 8 out of 10 of them would have been like, "Yeah, like that's going to make me go harder. Like that, yeah, stop whinging, like get it done." 10 out of 10 of my mates would have said, "It was hilarious. Like that's such a funny thing to say," right? But the reality is that for at least one, I'd hedge a bet probably 2 or 3 of them, that like stop whinging, which is something that as a male, they've been probably told hundreds of times in different contexts, could be the disconnecting response that kind of makes them go inward with their struggles and never seek help again. And I think some men, or not never seek help again, but just never kind of reach out. And the more men know this, like the more that this happens, I think men are inadvertently in today's like day and age, potentially testing this narrative by giving like small snippets of information to show that they're struggling, whatever that might look like. But then they get shut down. And every time that happens, they're less likely to reach out for support. And that's what I think is happening. We hear men don't reach out for support. I think men are trying. But I think these barriers, again, back to this masculinity society, what they're telling them they should be compared to what they are and all of this kind of stuff is actually just serving more as a barrier.
So are you saying for those 2 or 3 men that might have affected in a different way, that it would be triggering for them, that type of response?
I wouldn't use the word triggering. I think it just solidifies this internal view that men shouldn't talk, men shouldn't whinge. Men shouldn't, and just be, it's, and we all say it. We say it every day. I say it every day to my mates, like, stop it. Like, you know, you hear it, man up. Like, all of those kind of things are general statements. But what I'd love is for people to start just having a bit of a think about that. So my mate yesterday, I would never turn around to her and say, "Oh, you should never say that," because it's going to happen. But I think the more conversations we have about throwaway statements like that, and how if one person in that group is really struggling and they don't know the struggle, that could just be the tiny little thing that like makes the wound a little bit worse and stops them from talking at all.
Okay. So what are some ways then, Ali, for men to avoid getting to a crisis stage with their mental health?
Yeah. And I love that because I think there's two things here. One is the definition of crisis. I think we define crisis as like end of the line, like everything's done, right? And that is true. And that's definitely where we want to prevent us getting. But generalizing it like that might not be helpful because, like I said before, if you're drinking too much and you know you're drinking too much and you don't want to be drinking that much, you're at crisis in one part of your life. Everything else might seem fine, but that is kind of, that is something that you want to be addressing, right?
Yeah, it feels to me like crisis, when I say crisis, I mean the top of the spiral, not the bottom of it.
Yeah. Okay, so you're like, how do we not get to crisis points, the top of the...
And both of them are important. I feel, obviously, both of them are important and all points in between, but
yeah.
For me... And with my own mental health, I know that crisis is, well, my definition of crisis is when I start to spiral, not at the end of it.
Sure. Okay, that's great. Then we can run with that definition because that's an excellent definition and I agree. I think for men particularly because, so one thing I'll say about men in terms of back to barriers for a moment is that what we hear a lot is, and again, it's a lot to do with society and conditioning and how men are brought up, but it's, we don't have the language. Like often I don't even know what's going on for me. How am I supposed to put language to it? And so, sorry, I'm a very like story heavy person. I'll give
That's
you
all right.
another story I heard the other day, which I think was a really, really great one. And I spoke to a couple of my male mates about, they really resonated. This amazing man was talking about how he had no idea what was going for him. He just kept feeling like something was happening. And then one day he found himself in his lounge room crying. And the only thing that he could kind of analogize around it was that it felt like his brain was in a boxing match with Mike Tyson. And he had never taken a boxing lesson, never been into a ring in his life. And the things that were going on in his brain were all of the things that were going wrong in his life, the bad things he felt about himself, you know, the bad things he felt about the world around him. And he was being smashed by Mike Tyson. Why I use that as an example is because he then said after the fact, what became really good about that is he was like, I need to learn how to use that analogy, become a boxer. I need to learn how to get the tools. I need to take the training. I need to do the training camps and I need to figure out how to put things into my toolkit and become a better boxer so that when I get in that ring, I'm still going to lose. Things are still going to happen. No one rides for free. Life is hard. But I'm going to be so much better equipped to be able to go into those fights when they come up. And I just thought that was such an amazing kind of analogy because what that does is highlight the importance of putting things into place when you're good, when things feel good. Set up the things with your friends. Set up the things around you. Use resources like what I was saying we have in our support toolkit. Get all of the things into your toolbox so that you have a really, really solid foundation to fall on when you do feel like you're starting to just head into that point where things are getting overwhelming.
So I love that story and I think that story is helpful because that guy's not the only person who's ever experienced that. There will be people all around Australia who listen to Triple M every day and who don't listen to Triple M who would have been in that situation.
Absolutely, Sean. And I think the reason I used that specific example is because I have spoken to a lot of men, again, professionally and personally, and that highlights that real kind of, I'm really down, I don't know why, my brain feels like it's gotten away from me. Mm-hmm. I don't know what to do. And I hate to hear that. And I think what we need to do is set up those things so that blokes have the toolbox, they have the toolkit to be able to go to when they feel that even just, you know, those little things that they don't need to know what it is, but they have the toolkit there to be able to kind of tap back into to avoid it getting to that kind of crisis point.
Great. You said those words just then, I don't know what to do, and they're exactly the words I've got written down here. So that's a great segue for us to move on to this next point.
Yeah.
So they don't know what to do. What are the first or the early steps for somebody to take? If they don't know what to do, what might be the first or the early steps for them to take? What would you recommend?
So I think we're going to get into the like reach out to somebody for support, but I think internally something that really does have a lot of power and does have a lot of work and a lot, and men I've spoken to in the research setting have kind of said like what's protective for them, and it's the people around them, it's the people they love. So I think the first step when there's these barriers that you're feeling to whatever it is, stigma, shame, you know, not having the language, whatever it is, I think it's important to reframe those thoughts about what it means to reach out for support. And I think like you can use an example. So like, Sean, imagine like you're having a really rough time, right? And you're feeling rubbish but you're not really sure kind of what's going on. You just feel that even though you're turning up to radio, showing up for your family, carrying on as normal with your mates, but you have this like deep sense of worry and emptiness and despair, whatever it is.
Yep.
Now think of your son, father, best mate, boss, whoever, a bloke you love and care about, and flip the script. So picture that the way you're feeling from what I've just said is the way they're feeling, and then speak to them how you'd speak to yourself. Would you tell them that they're a burden? Would you tell them that they need to be a man and figure it out themselves? No. Would you tell them to stop complaining? No. Would you tell them that they don't deserve to be feeling the way that they're feeling and that it doesn't have to be like this forever, and encourage them to talk to you or help them to find support another way? Probably. So I think that like it's reframing what reaching out for support actually means before you even do the reaching out part.
Jeez, you've nailed that, I think. I think you've absolutely succinctly, that's a really great way to look at it, I think.
I think, sorry, Sean, can I just add, I think like also just trying, I find men especially like really fixate on the outcome of reaching out for support. You know, like, what does this mean? What does this say about me? What's going to happen? Is it going to fix, you know, what I need or whatever that is? But just thinking about getting to the first step, like that's the hardest part. Like this reframing is so important because, yeah, it's just like I know the thing the men like, I don't want to be a burden thing comes up a lot, right?
Yep.
I know men are really worried about being a burden to the people close to them. But what we know is that being open about how you're feeling is a way to connect. And then when you're more connected to those around you and the people that you love and love you, you actually become a better partner and father and friend. So, you know, like the people around you want to be there for you. Starting the conversation gives them the opportunity.
And then you have a better chance of moving on from feeling that way, right?
Absolutely. 100%. 100%. And then something that I've heard back when I've said this to men is that, I need to know exactly what to say. Like, I can't just have a conversation. And we hear that a lot. But like, honestly, what I would say is when you've made that decision, you've done the hardest part, all you need to do is use language that kind of feels right for you. So once you've made the decision to start the conversation, done the hardest part, and it's as okay to start with, I'm struggling right now, can we chat, as it is to say, I don't even know what the hell's going on or how I feel, but I just know that something's off. Like, and for blokes especially, like they're like, yeah, but when? Like, when do I have this conversation? And I don't want to, like, you know, talking to a mate feels tough or whatever. You just do it in a way that works for you. So, again, I'll go to the gym because of my previous example. But if you're working out together and you're in the middle of a set, bro, like this set feels as tough as the last few weeks have been. Like, throw it in there. Or you're gaming, you're playing a video game. I feel like life has been like kicking my ass as much as this avatar is kicking my ass right now. Mm-hmm. One, I think that's really pertinent for Triple M that I use with my male friends is like we are all like diehard Foo Fighters fans. And they're like, you know, back in the day when I started as a psych, they're like, Ali, like you can help us with all our stuff. You can be our psychologist. And then I was like, great. And then 2 years went, they were in the military. And they're like, 2 years went past and I'm like, well, you haven't used me like you said you'd use me. Like you haven't come to me for mental health support. And they're like, we don't know how. And so I'm like, so now we've got it set up that if they're feeling a certain way, they'll send me a Foo Fighters song with the lyrics in the Foo Fighters song. They'll be like, I don't know what this means, but this is how I'm feeling. And we'll have a chat about it. It doesn't have to be a chat about, okay, mate, this is like, I'm going to analyze this and tell you how you're feeling. Awesome. And I promise you, they feel 50 times better from just being able to make the connection with that piece of music that they feel. And it is honestly the best thing I have set up in my circle because it works.
I gotta love that, and look, it's a bonus that it involves the Foo Fighters. But I love that you hold them accountable to that, where they make a claim and then they don't follow through on it, and then you're sort of going, "Well, why not?"
Yeah, 100%. And in terms of like what you said before, what men can do in this space, in that accountability, something that I think is really important for guys because things like depression and struggle show up differently for men, and it can have a really unfair crossover with these things of like, oh, he's just being a bloke, you know, drinking, anger, violence, like those things, they have a crossover relationship. We don't know whether one is because you're depressed or one is causing depression, but they're very, very closely correlated. Mm. So when those behaviors are going on and actually you're turning up in the world exactly how you think you should be turning up on the world, and it's incongruent with how you're feeling, that's the confusing spot. But if you can set up processes with your mate, one, for example, is the like, ask how they're doing, but do it, ask them twice. So just ring up for a conversation. It could be like, hey, are we going to the pub on the weekend? But at the beginning of that conversation, ask them how they're doing. And then at the end of the conversation, ask them how they're doing. I can assure you there's going to be so much opportunity within that conversation to get a different response and a more honest response at the end because the connection has happened.
My sense is that sometimes, you know, going back to what you were talking about not knowing when to start, have that conversation, how to have that conversation, and you're kind of talking around the fact that men really wanted some certainty around things. I feel like sometimes they just feel like that they'll always feel that way, or opening up might not lead to them feeling better or improving. Is that, do you get a sense of that from men, or, you know, in terms of the hesitancy?
Talk to me a bit more. So as in the hesitancy of like that driving the hesitancy to open up, that they think that.
Well, I'm going to open up to somebody and I'm going to sort of start telling them about how rotten I'm feeling right now. But then what, how do I get past that rotten feeling? Like, or am I just going to sound like somebody who's a downer and negative?
Yeah. 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 And then that's it. So that's the stigma and the fear, right? And I think we need to talk about what's driving that narrative in a bloke in the first place. Like I said before, I think, and I am very, very conscious that I'm a female talking about men's mental health. I'm very conscious of that, and I don't want to talk for men. But it's kind of like I would like to know what's going on and what are the narrative and what are the things that have underpinned that mindset for a man to feel that the people around them wouldn't engage with them in a way that is wholly caring for the way that they're feeling. Yep. And we talk about, I don't want to jump too much into suicide, but I think we need to, because we know what's going on with suicide. We know, you know, there's 9 suicide deaths in Australia, 7 of them are men. We know that 50 to 60% of people who die by suicide weren't engaged with formal mental health services at the time of their death. We know that the majority of that number is men. So we know that men are not reaching out, and we know that they're not speaking up. So for me to get to the thinking of why they're not speaking up is the important part, but also to foster, like to figure out how to foster the culture around men that speaking up is okay. And to your point, what I will say is what we do know is when men, not to generalize, some men say that when they are really in a place of kind of deep struggle, often the last thing they want to do is talk. So that's where having these processes set up where mates or people around them are reaching in. So I've heard that in the research, like, you know, if I'm in struggle, I don't know how to reach out. I feel like a burden by reaching out. I'm too ashamed to reach out. I kind of need people to reach in to be able to start that conversation. And that's where I will say that, yes, have a conversation, but I think we also need to be talking about the blokes being there for other blokes. Because, you know, that kind of, if you're a bloke who's comfortable with talking about how you're feeling, normalize that with the other guys that you spend time with. I think so often men are experiencing similar things, so like feeling similar ways, and they're doing it on their own and they're in the same circle.
Yeah.
So it takes one person, one of the guys, to just bring it up into the convo to then allow the conversation to actually happen. And that's the thing that makes you realize that this is not forever, that you're not alone, that this is potentially, you know, something that you're sharing that, you know, with your mates.
And we do need to talk about suicide. Suicide is the reason why Triple M's No Talk Day started. And when we started, it was closer to 6 in 8 people each day. And now it's getting closer to 7 in 9 people each day.
Yep.
And we're a male-targeted brand, and we felt a responsibility to, we felt it was incumbent upon us to actually use our powers for good. We have this, you know, we have these towers and these radio stations, and we have this loyalty from this group of people who are absolutely getting eviscerated by suicide in this country.
Yeah.
And the thing about that, we wanted to explore that a bit more, which is why we engaged, you know, experts like you to pick, because we don't know this stuff. We're good at making radio and playing people's favourite songs and coming up with shows that are entertaining and stuff like that and broadcasting footy, but we don't know about this sort of stuff. We needed to go to people like you who know this sort of stuff to help light the path and guide us through this sort of thing. And It took me a while with No Talk Day to work out that we're talking to two different groups of people simultaneously. And that one of those groups is the one you were just talking about, is the people who are worried about somebody who are struggling with their mental health and how they reach out. How can they, what role can they play? What are some tips for them? Because it's confronting. It can be daunting to see somebody who's suffering and not know how to approach them or how to engage with them.
Yeah, absolutely. I would also say, Sean, that it's not always that either. I think we could both say that we've heard the narrative that he was the last bloke that I thought would have taken his life. He was the happiest bloke. He was the last bloke that I thought that would have happened.
That is true. You do hear that a lot.
Yeah. And so I think it's not, back to my previous point about setting up those foundations, it's actually not always about looking out for signs. We do hear, like, what are the signs? What can I do? But because we've got this kind of, this underlying thing going on of men not having a language to be able to talk about what's going on, or just feeling shit and not knowing why, we need to be having conversations all of the time. We don't need to just be asking, you know, how are you going, mate? Are you all right? When we think that somebody's not all right. The way to ask those questions is when things are seemingly going all right.
Right.
And keep asking them. Lock in bi-weekly phone calls. It does not matter what the topic of conversation is. Just commit to the time. You'll soon know when somebody's not answering the phone. You'll soon know when the tone changes. You'll soon know when things change for the other person. But what it's doing is also setting a really solid foundation that there's always somewhere and someone to come back to with communication lines open.
Yeah, okay. Can I ask you, Ali, about what your thoughts and around seeing a GP and mental health plans? What role can they play in managing your own mental health and your well-being?
I think an absolutely invaluable role. I think it's really interesting, actually, the amount of people I speak to who don't even know what a mental health care plan is.
Okay, so can I just stop you there? So when we were talking about I don't know what to do, so when do I go and see my GP?
Okay, so just like I said with the setting up the foundations with your mates and what I said before about drinking too much might be the crisis point that you need, It's at those times. It's at the times where something's feeling off and you don't know what it is. It's at the times that I would encourage you to think about having the conversation with somebody else, that I would encourage you to go to your GP. Your GP is trained to help you figure out what's going on in their assessment, to come up with a mental health care plan. So what that assessment will tell you is kind of, you know, a bit of an idea of what might be going on. Mm. And the mental health care plan can then be set up to get you to the places that are going to help put in those levels of support for you. So it's not just relying on having the conversation with the friend when things start, and that's what I'll highlight, when things start to feel off, when things start to feel, you don't have to have the language. Once again, just like you don't have to have the language to have a conversation with your mate, you don't have to have the language to go and have a conversation with your GP. Your GP is trained to be able to have that conversation with you and to be able to curate that mental health care plan based on what your needs are. Everybody's needs are different, but I would say that the collective here is that when you start feeling like your sleep's impacted, you're faking your way through the workday, you're out at the footy with the boys, but actually really thinking, stressing about what's going on at home, you can't have the conversation with your wife, you can't have the conversation with your boss. When those things are really pulling you into a space where you just don't know what's going on and you feel overwhelmed, that is when these things are really important. Set yourself up so that you don't get into the place where you're silenced. Because I think what those things do, if you let them still go on, you get yourself into a shame spiral, and shame is what stops us going anywhere.
Okay.
And shame for men is so highly correlated with things like depression and suicidality and you know, substance misuse. And all shame needs to completely multiply is secrecy, silence, and judgment. And then once that happens, it's so much harder. So if you're feeling yourself start to feel, you know, oh my gosh, I can't provide for my family, That's a clear ticker to get that out, get to a doctor, have a conversation before that piles onto another shame narrative and another shame narrative, and then you end up just internalizing everything and at that crisis point.
Beautifully said. What is a mental health plan? Could you talk to me about that?
So a mental health care plan is just essentially, it's something that your doctor will do a quick assessment with you based on the information that you give them about what's going on. And a mental health care plan will help you. So if you're getting it to go and see a psychologist, for instance, it will help with like the Medicare rebate to be able to make that happen. It's basically a personalized plan that puts in for you mental health care support where needed as per your needs.
Can I ask you about panic attacks and what a panic attack is? Because I'm not sure whether people would understand or know what a panic attack is and even when it might be happening for them.
Yeah, so a panic attack, how it feels is more kind of probably resonant than what it is.
Yep.
And how it feels is like a loss of control, like a sudden wave of like overwhelming fear, discomfort, panic, and I would say loss of control. So you're in a space where your body is viscerally feeling like your heart, some people report feeling like they're having a heart attack. It's like the walls are closing in, right? The other kind of insidious part about it is that there seems to be no clear trigger or danger in the way. So it's, you know, it's easy for us to reason that if we see a lion coming at our face, that we're going to go into that kind of fear state.
Mm.
But picture the fear state that you'd be in if a lion was coming to your face for no tangible reason whatsoever. And so this is where I was like, well, going into it then means that like the underlying kind of causes of what those existing triggers might be. And I think that's very individual for different people as to what might be kind of the foundation for that response.
Mm-hmm.
But in the context of a panic attack, I think the hardest thing that you'd hear about it is that it just seemingly comes out of nowhere. You could be walking to have a beer with the boys, and then all of a sudden this overwhelming feeling of dread and panic comes over you. And like I said, it's really held and felt in the body, so it can be a really confusing experience.
So it jumps you and it feels physical?
It can absolutely feel physical, absolutely. It's the sweat, it's the, some people, tremors, it's the feeling like you're going to have a heart attack, and it's the brain, like your prefrontal cortex is offline. Like everything is just, you're in fight, flight, freeze mode. And again, insidiously, you don't know why.
Yep. And is there a sort of a feeling of no way out?
Absolutely. Absolutely. It feels like it's going to last forever. What I will say is that 100% of the time that somebody has had a panic attack, they have survived it. And that's what you need to tell yourself when you're having a panic attack, that 100% of the time that people have had panic attacks, they have survived it. And that is the beginning of that kind of protective, okay, we can bring ourselves back online. We can bring ourselves back into the, you know, the present moment.
Mm.
Because the only certainty about what's going on is that you will make it out the other side.
Okay. Thank you for that. Somebody, we were having a meeting here a few weeks ago, and one of my colleagues talked about something. You mentioned things that happen that we don't realize are mental health situations. If I say that, does that make sense to you?
Oh,
I can give you more context.
Absolutely. Yeah, give me the context. Yeah.
So his context was, I think he had in-laws staying with him and something happened and he just completely overreacted. I can't remember what it was, and maybe it doesn't matter, but he completely overreacted and then caught himself and realized that it was triggering some stress in him around whatever it was that was happening. And he went, and he said, I didn't realize, but that's a mental health situation for me.
Sean, you have like, if I could have a soapbox to do 20 years of TED Talks, this would be the platform.
All right, like, well, today.
I think this is the problem. I think that mental health is an unfair term because mental health is, or mental health is an unfair term for us to link to when we're having problems, because we are experiencing mental health 24 hours, 7 days a week.
Mm.
We are, from the minute that we're born, conditioning begins. From the minute that we're born, we have biological, psychosocial, and cultural factors that are contributing to the person that we're going to become.
Mm-hmm.
And things are happening all of the time to kind of set that foundation and that profile for who we are and how we respond to things. I want to give you a really tangible example, the Bondi attacks. So when the Bondi attacks happened, my first thought was we are going to have a very large section of the population walking around in a trauma state. And my friends around me were like, what are you talking about? And what something like Bondi does is it happens and there are the people that are directly affected, those attacked, their families. Then there are the people that are in the shopping centre at the time. Then there are the people that live in Bondi. Then there are the people that have heard about it, that live in Sydney. Then there are the people in New South Wales. Then there are people around Australia. Then there are people around the world. And what happens is when something happens that's traumatic and we experience it, hear about it, our own traumas come to the surface. And we've all got them. Again, like I said, no one rides for free. We've all got them at different levels and we experience them differently. But with something like Bondi, you had so many people that were indirectly, inverted commas, impacted by that, but feeling so viscerally, and I will use the word here, triggered. And they didn't know why. So what happens there is it's, okay, I'm feeling this way, but I have no right to feel this way. I wasn't there. Nothing happened to me. So then I'm quiet about the way that I'm feeling. And then this is playing out with my friends. So I'm like, oh, no one's talking about it because they're all quiet about the way they're feeling because they feel like they don't have the right to be responding to that. To circle this back to your point about is everything mental health, because we're all working around with our own stuff, of course that stuff's going to impact us. What happens with trauma is that if you're triggered or you're in a flashback or you're experiencing something that brings your own trauma up, your body will get to a state as if you are experiencing that trauma again. It's not, oh, that thing happened to me. Your body and your brain think that you are experiencing that exact thing. Mm. So I think we need to be aware. This is what I think, this goes back to my very, very initial point about my example with my friend at the gym. It's like, it's never just the stop whinging. It's never just the stop whinging. And you've got to be careful with these things. Every single person in a circle of people that you're in are going to have a different experience and a different story. And they're all going to have things that are playing from their mental health experiences.
Yeah. Okay. Wow. I didn't expect that this would be this good today. I don't know why. I've got nothing to base it on, but you know, I just feel like you've been a revelation today, Ali, and I really appreciate that. Ali, it's been just a tremendous experience today. I've really enjoyed it. I'm very grateful for your time and for your expertise and your knowledge. And I can tell you're doing wonderful work in this space, and we need people like you. So please continue to do it for as long as you can.
That's super, super kind. Thank you.
I don't know how much you give yourself credit or how much you realise how accomplished you are, but I know we can view ourselves very differently to how other people view us. And my impression of you today, I'm just super impressed with the way you showed up today. I'm incredibly grateful for it. So I really do appreciate it.
That's really kind. Those words mean a lot to me, Sean.
Well, I'm pleased.
Thank you.
If this podcast has brought up emotions that feel hard to manage right now, remember it's perfectly okay to reach out for support. If you find it tough to talk to a mate about what's going on, you can reach out to Lifeline on 13 11 14 or visit lifeline.org.au/talk.